has joined. Has joined.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I take it you're the first one on?
I think so.
I'm here as well. You said shalom.
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 So we can begin.
Shalom. Yeah.
This is the Deep Zohar class. We're studying the Sulam commentary on the Zohar from Parashah Vayera, section 19. We'll begin with Pasuk 247 after the L'shem Yehud.
L'shem Yehud, Kudsha Brechu, Vishkin Te, Vitkilu, Urchimu, Utkilu, Utkilu, Urchimu. Vayakta, L'shem, Yudhe, Bavate, Vayehuda, Shalim, B'shem, Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, Lasok Torah Mitzvah, Vayhino Amadunai Elohino Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kunenei Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kunenehu. Mishpat Har Shaim Vagehinom Kimad Iktiv Hua Hashem Mim Him Tir Al Sodom Weal Amra Gafrit Weish Wedomer Weshov Yainam Olim Velo Yakumu Liom Hadin Shene Emar Asher Hapach Hashem Ba'afo Uvahamato Ba'afo Beolam Hazeh Uvahamato Ha'olam Haba. The translation. The sinners are sentenced in Gehinnom according to what is written. Then Hashem rained upon Sodom and upon Amorah, brimstone and fire. And they never emerged from there, and shall not rise for the day of judgment, as it is written, which Hashem overthrew in his anger. And in his wrath. In his anger refers to this world, and in his wrath refers to the world that is coming. My commentary, the Pasuk is clear as written, and again we notice that Rabbi Ashlag made no comments on this verse. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Well, I was thinking, this is Hannah, the distance between anger and wrath is mercy and teshuvah before the world comes.
That's well said. Anger is an emotion. Wrath is an action. The emotion comes from the world, from Zeranpin essentially, but obviously from the negative system. And wrath is the malchut of the negative system. And the main point is to keep the manifestation, which is the malchut, from actually happening. And as Anna said, Teshuvah is what causes that, what keeps Malchut manifesting and unifying with the negative aspect of Zeranpin. And the previous verse, you know, I was pointing out, it says that these people would not rise. And here it's confirming these people will not rise. But these are the people who lived in Sodom. And if we go back to what Abraham was negotiating with God, what if there are 50 righteous people? Will you still destroy the city? And God said, no, he wouldn't. And but there aren't 50 righteous people. And then we go step by step down to the number 10. And we all comment, all the commentators ask, why didn't he go to one? But we have various answers for that question, and we've discussed that at length. But the real question is, the souls that were living in Sodom and Gomorrah at the time of the destruction had no redeeming levels. Were they not human beings? No, they were human. Their souls come from God. So how can it be that they don't rise at the resurrection of the dead? How can we understand that? This is taking the words literally in the Torah. They're destroyed and there's no resurrection. And that's a very harsh punishment, that your soul is destroyed. It doesn't happen. Now, we know from our study of reincarnation, we know from our study readings and elsewhere in the Zohar, that it's not true, that every person potentially will rise. They may not rise as the full soul that they're known to in a given lifetime, but they will rise because the parts of their soul that did good deeds are going to find that they will be resurrected. But this is a very deep study, and it's a somewhat confusing, but I want to stress that there is nobody who's left behind. Because anybody's soul has to live eternally, and living in Gehinnom is not life. So should I go on? Go ahead.
So would they spend like a certain time or more time in Gehinnom?
Yes, and we read in the previous verse that the longest someone spends in Gehinnom is 12 months.
12 months.
But we have to realize that 12 months, the time in Gehinnom is not the same time that we live in this world. So someone
has joined.
12 months in Gehinnom and be 20 centuries in this physical world. It depends on how much it takes to cleanse them of their physicality to the point that they will be given free will when they come back into this life. When they reincarnate, they're given an aspect of free will. Because it's not truly complete free will, because they bring baggage with them. They bring some of the negative actions they did from previous lifetimes. So that if as long as you have a tendency to do negative things, you really don't have free will. Free will is only when you are at a point where you're literally at the point of balance. And then you have free will. Which decision would you make? Which choice will you choose? But as long as there's any aspect of a tendency to move in one direction or the other direction, that's not considered free will. And that's what human beings have to realize. Whenever you have this tendency to choose one direction or to choose another direction, that's called coercion. And any form of coercion, as the adage says, there is no coercion in spirituality. And that's where we understand the code word that's spoken of about Hashem hardening Pharaoh's heart. How could it be that Hashem is hardening Pharaoh's heart? What the Zohar explains is that Hashem brought Pharaoh back to a level of free will, a level of free choice. He brought him back to that point in the consciousness of Hashem that he had the choice to say, no, I'm not going to let the people go, or he had the choice to say, yes, go ahead and leave. But because Pharaoh's orientation was to physicality, and in his mind, slaves represented physical wealth, and physical wealth, he chose physicality over spirituality. Should I go on?
Ms. Malka.
Go ahead.
So the verse states that they will be no more. So their souls are returned back to Shem. But they will not come back into the same conscious body. That they will be purified, being in Gehinnom for such a length of time, and they will come out with a purified mind, purified conscious. So, is it they're going to be in a different body because they'll be in a different, they'll be on the right side, the positive side, not the negative side, when they do get resurrected? Do they come back in their same body, their same vessel? Or is it vessel?
Malcolm, it will not be the same body. But you have to realize that you're thinking in terms of the soul means. If I use as an example a human being, and that human being has really done really great negative action. That human being consists of 613 components of that soul. So when we say that human being and we give it that human being a name, that name is a composed of 613 parts. They go into Gehinnom and they get cleansed. All 613 parts get cleansed. Some parts will get cleansed in 1 month. Some parts will get cleansed in 3 months. Some parts will take all 12 months. Now, I'm explaining it and I'm making up these numbers, but I'm trying to give you the understanding in a very strong way. So when the first part that only took a month to cleanse comes out of Gehinnom, he's leaving the other 612 parts behind in Gehinnom. So now he comes out and he reincarnates. That part reincarnates in a totally new soul complement. He is one part of a new 613 components. Those same 613 components that went into Gehinnom together because of the lifetime that human being lived and the actions that human being did will never come back together in that level. They'll never come back together, all 613 components, at the same moment. They'll be parts of a different body. And yes, so they resurrect, but they don't resurrect in that physical body. And they don't resurrect with the same 600 and 13 components. Now, some who done it properly have become righteous, have become tzaddikim. They will go into Gehinnom solely for the purpose of attracting all of these subcomponents from other people that have finally finished their cleansing in Gehinnom. And when he leaves, the tzaddik leaves Gehinnom, he takes those soul parts with him.
With
that
him.
Is the way the system works.
You mean with him, does he take it up back to the
It takes the soul, that one soul part, that is back to a level where it can be reincarnated and gets rebuilt into a 613 new parts that we call a different soul.
So basically it's what, a soul bank, basically.
Yes. It's actually 613 soul banks.
Yeah. So that vessel that dies,
the human body that dies never resurrects. It's just going to return to dust, and it stays as dust.
And those that are righteous, they do return back in their vessel.
Yes, the body never dies because the body has corrected itself. The body has been taught to share. And so its actions become just like the soul, always sharing. There is no longer an element of the desire to receive for oneself alone within that body and within those soul parts that are really no longer separated from each other. They're all one. The consciousness of the 613 soul parts and the consciousness of the 613 body parts are all unified to be close to Hashem and to share with others. Because that is really the meaning of being close to Hashem, having the same attributes that Hashem has, the attributes of behavior. And that's what we're studying in the Tomer Devorah and many other books. That's what our work is this month, coming month, is to do the Teshuvah, to reunify all of the 613 parts of our soul and our body so that the next year we are totally righteous. And that's literally what takes place in the 22 days of the Tishrei holidays.
I have one more question.
If you could have more than one.
Okay, the soul, we'll go back to the soul bank. You said that one part of the 612 left behind, one part goes up. Now, does that soul bank have to accumulate all 613 parts of souls before it can be reincarnated into another body, another vessel? Does it have to build enough sparks of, does it have to have 613 parts of a soul before it can get reincarnated into a body? Or does a certain spark go into?
There are 613 soul banks, as I said, and what it means, Every body part, which is a soul part, all of the hearts as an example, all of the left lungs as an example, all of the right lungs, they are in three different locations, whatever that means, the word locations. They're all in different locations in the Garden of Eden. And Hashem comes along and picks 613 components one component from each of 613 locations, and he puts them together. And he says, you go into this body, this new body that you never saw before, this new body that's going to have these parents. And the soul looks, he's given a view, this new creation of the 613 components, and he's given a view of what his life will be like in that new body. And he agrees that this is the best body and soul combinations to achieve the tikkun of all 613 components.
Mm-hmm.
And because he agrees to that, he agrees to go into that reincarnation. But it's Hashem who is picking and choosing all of those components.
Right.
Now, there is some, when we studied advanced reincarnation, there is a procedure that it's really 613 parts that are called nefesh, and then there are 613 parts that are called ruah, and there are 613 parts that are called neshama. And since this is not the first lifetime, the nefesh might be complete. The 613 parts of the nefesh may have been cleansed in Gehinnom and all exited Gehinnom together.
Mm-hmm.
And the nefesh, that 613 part nefesh, is in its own location in the Garden of Eden.
Right.
And when the 613 parts of the Ruach have been put together by Hashem and said, you're going into this body, that Ruach needs a nefesh. So it attaches itself to that nefesh, but it's not its own initial nefesh from the initial first incarnation. It's a different nefesh. And it's taken, takes on the word Geger, it takes on the word convert. We've studied that, but it's all of these things that I'm bringing and I'm trying to make clear, it's complicated. Because you have all these different parts and components and levels.
Right. Okay,
But we simplify it by saying the word soul. But what do we really mean? Are we talking about a nefesh? Are we talking about a component of the nefesh? And so forth.
Right.
And that's why the language of Kabbalah is really specific and almost, I could say, scientific. Because when a Kabbalist is speaking in the language of branches to another Kabbalist, they know exactly what they're referring to. Whereas a student of Kabbalah hasn't reached that level. So when a student of Kabbalah starts talking about this, the Sephirot and which part of the soul is related to which Sephirah and which world, it's confusing because we're not as exact as we need to be. But it is the best that we have at the level that we're at.
Okay, well, so that explains how the wording says they will be no more. So, okay.
Meaning they will be no more as that 613 components as one.
Right.
They will be no more as that human being.
Right.
But there is no disappearance in spirituality. Those 613 soul sparks, soul components, they never get destroyed.
Right.
They just never come back as that individual human.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that statement is cleared up for me. Okay.
Good.
We're almost out of time. So does anybody have any other questions you want to talk about?
I have one.
Go ahead, Randy.
Okay. My question is, then, if you're a convert, is it because your nephew is already done its time, and now the Ruach has something to correct?
I don't have a clear answer to give you.
Okay.
The possibilities are that an action was done by the components of your soul parts in a previous lifetime. You participated in an action that drew you further away from Hashem and dropped you from the level of a child of Israel to the level of B'nai Noah, or dropped you from the level of B'nai Noah to the level of a pagan. And through the actions of this lifetime, those components, soul sparks, have merited to make the conversion back, to take the action to return to the level of the child of Israel. I cannot tell you that it's all 613 components of your Ruah, but I can say that in order to make that transition, your 613 parts of the Nefesh completed its tikkun in a previous lifetime. And so the level of your Nefesh, when it was reconstituted by Hashem into a soul, what we call a soul, at the level of Ruach, it chose, or it was given this converted soul, this Nefesh level, that was complete. That Nefesh level does not have any tikkun at all. It is supporting the Ruach in its actions to become complete and to achieve its tikkun. And part of its tikkun is to decide through free choice, yes, I choose to become Jewish. And others who will reach that same decision point will say, no, I don't want to go through the effort of becoming Jewish in this lifetime. I'll do it next lifetime. And as an example of that, I've said this to you before, there are many Jewish souls that have chosen to follow the path of Buddha. They're called Jubus, American Jewish Buddhists. And after they have been studying for about 25 years as a Buddhist, their teachers come to them, and it's not just one of them. It's not in it here and there. It's a consistent process in Buddhism. If they have a Jewish soul, whatever that means in the context of all of the components, their teacher comes to them and says, you need to become Jewish. In order for you to grow properly and spiritually more, you need to become Jewish. So return to Judaism. But each of these people have free choice. Some say, yes, I'll return. And they go and they find a place of study that supports the teachings that they've learned for 25 years. And they grow additionally. And others say, you know, I really am enjoying the honor and the study that I have and the friendships that I have, and I don't want to change that. And so I will stay an American Buddhist. And next lifetime, I'll come in as a Jew. Each of them had free choice, because that's the whole issue. Because you cannot get close to Hashem except by choice. And that choice cannot have any aspect of coercion. And this is why I cannot tell you what is the rule, because it's relative to each of the soul components involved. I hope it's halfway clear.
It's very clear. Thank you.
Any other questions? Kodesh Tov. Our Kodesh connection will be in the 7 o'clock class in about 2 hours. Shalom Gadol. Shalom.
Shalom. Shalom.